and welcome to another special edition on the Rattlegion Broadcasting Network. This is Cancer Q&A Part 2. I am the guest of honor, as a matter of fact, Mr. Mark Rattlegion, and frankly, I'm mortified. And joining me tonight to ask the questions and get the answers that you all want to hear is Mr. Jesse Starcher. How you doing, Jesse?
Doing good, sir. Thank you again for allowing me to get on here and update our listeners and ask you some tough questions about the battle that you're going through. Let's go ahead. I'm going to just recap real quick. You step in, sir. Last time we had a chance to discuss what was going on in your life. The battle with the big C, cancer. Call it by its name, you told me. This was back in April when, I think it was shortly after you had been diagnosed with lymphoma. And we had a fairly decent discussion about, you know, your expectations, your fears, the road that led you to where you were at that time. So we obviously agreed that we were going to come back and revisit as soon as we could, give our listeners an update as to where you are now. Now, we're 4 months out from that initial discussion. So I'm sure that we have a lot of stories to tell, a lot of, a lot of things that have come to light since then. Let's go ahead and talk about what you had to face. I know initially they obviously were telling you, okay, hey, I think after we spoke in April, you had got your port in. You just got your port in for your chemo. I think you took your first round.
All right. Well, this is sort of a two-part story here. Initially, I was set for 6 rounds of what they call R-CHOP. And I got 3 rounds in, and then I had a PET scan, and the PET scan had shown that I hadn't been making the progress that I should have. Apparently, much like everything else with me, I had a resistant and aggressive form of
much
lymphoma.
Like everything else.
Yeah, much like everything else that is associated with Mark Rattlegion, resistant and aggressive. So it wasn't responding to the R-CHOP the way that it should have, and they said, okay, we're going to need to do a more aggressive form of chemotherapy. So they changed me to what they call RICE, R-I-C-E. And what that involved was I would go in on a Friday and I would go in for about 6 to 8 hours of chemo. And then I would get a pump and I would wear that pump until the next day. And then I would get about 4 hours of chemo, 4 to 6 hours. And then they would give me a pump again to wear. I would repeat the same thing on Sunday. I would leave Sunday with the pump, and then I would have to come back Monday for them to disconnect the pump. And I went through two rounds of RICE before they had me come back and do another PET scan. Mm-hmm. And I did the PET scan, and I did my labs. I'm not going to bury the lead like my doctor did. I'll just come right out and say it. There was no sign of cancer.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Awesome stuff. Well, let me ask you real quick about the chemo, because I'm just a dumb boy from rural Ohio here. I've talked to a few of our friends and family who have had to, you know, battle cancer. But I've never really had the chance to ask them, like, you know, what's involved here? I mean, are they injecting you with some kind of radiation and it's fluid, or how does that work? I mean, give me an idea.
It's IV bags, basically.
Okay.
It's different IV bags with different medications. A lot of times I wasn't paying that close to attention as to even what they were hanging on me. My thing was always, when can I go home? When can I get out of here?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I know one of them was like Rituxan and there was some other stuff, but you'd have to look up exactly what R-CHOP is consists of and what RICE consists of to know specifically. But it was just IV bags. They would access my port and they would, you know, clean it, and then they would hook up various bags, and you know, and some of these bags took longer than others.
Did any of them glow?
Did any of them glow? No. I wish though. I kept waiting to be injected with gamma radiation, and I tell you, if I had, Moffitt Hospital wouldn't be standing at this time.
Yeah. Give us an idea of, I mean, how it felt.
Well, between our chop and rice, I lost all the hair on my head and my face. And what's growing back is either gray or white at this time. It's also not growing back. It's growing back in chunks in different places. Now, I was already going bald before all this. So it's not like that. It's not like when I lost the hair on my head, it was a complete, oh my God.
Yeah.
I need a wig. You know, that was the least of my worries. But I lost the hair on my chest and on my legs. I'm just getting there. My wife just yelled out eyebrows and eyelashes. And I was just going to say, the worst part about losing the hair was the eyebrows and the eyelash. Which, funny story about that, my wife tells me about two weeks prior to when I realized it, that my eyebrows had fallen out. And I look like I had no eyebrows. Mm-hmm. And my eyelashes had completely fallen out. And one of my more prettier features, I don't have model good looks. I too have a face for radio. But I wouldn't necessarily say people think I'm ugly. But one of my more attractive features on a short, fat, bald, white guy is my girlish eyelashes. I had very long, girly eyelashes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't anymore. Now I just look like a fat, bald albino. just a hairless ape waddling around. So do I still have hair on my back? I don't have a lot of hair on my back either. Wow. So most of my body hair fell out. Most of my facial hair fell out. You know, I was pretty smooth there for a while.
So you're smooth as a baby's bottom. Let's talk about how it made you feel. Like, were you, because I know when we were doing podcasts, dude, you were wiped out. There were a couple times where you're just like, okay, I've got to start this podcast at 9 because bedtime's happening at 10. And if it doesn't happen at 10, there's a very good possibility you're falling asleep in the middle of something. So make you tired, or clearly that's one of the things that happened, right?
Over the course of 4 months, my energy level diminished on some days to nothing.
Wow.
There were definitely days it was hard for me to get out of bed. There were definitely days where, now I worked through all of this.
Yeah, dude.
I work a job where I have to sit in a jail for 12 hours. Now, I'm not digging ditches, you know, and I'm not like running around the jail slapping cuffs on people and tackling them to the ground. I don't touch people ever. But it is 12 hours. It's 12 hours of sitting at a computer and walking from my desk to the nursing station, which is, you know, a good 50 feet or so, or walking from my desk to the clinic, which is a good 100, 150 feet. And it may be more than that. I don't know. It feels like sometimes I'm walking across a football field. But it's a long jail in the shape kind of an eye with a one section corded off for central booking, which is where I'm stationed. So if you'll understand what I'm saying, think of an eye, but then at the bottom of the eye where you would have the little cross hatch at the bottom of the eye.
Mm-hmm.
You drew a little line out.
Okay.
That's kind of how the jail is shaped. And I would have to walk from where booking is to the other side of the jail whenever there was an issue where I had to go to the clinic. So I would get tired throughout the day. I mean, 3-4 o'clock, that was about my limit. About 3-4 o'clock is where I would become so exhausted I couldn't keep my eyes open anymore. But I would push through, and I would leave at 7:30, and I would come home, and I would start to get chills. They're multiplying. I got chills. They're multiplying. But I would start to get chills, and I would have to wrap myself up in blankets, which was hilarious to my wife, because the house would be like 100 degrees, and I would be, you know, sitting there like a cartoon character with icicles forming on my nose, and you know, and I was blue, you know, the whole nine yards. And yeah, I had to have a hard bedtime about 10:30 because I couldn't stay awake anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good day. On a good day, there was no nausea. There was no extreme exhaustion to the point where I couldn't even make it to 8 o'clock. You know, it was just, you know, I was fine, but I would need to go to bed about 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
Bad days were the ones where it took all of my energy to get out of bed and chew food.
Oh, wow.
Like there was a circumstance, this might have actually been before I started chemo, where I was so achy, my muscles were so achy, and I was in such bad shape. I went home, I went to bed, I woke up, I had soaked the entire bed from sweat.
Yeah.
And
I think I remember was, you just, yeah, I think I remember you telling us it became like Swamp Thing or something in the bedroom.
and honestly, it was exhausting to chew food. Like wow. I had to, like at some point, I think I asked my wife to make me a chocolate, you know, like a protein shake because I couldn't chew solid food. Now after chemo, there were definitely times when it was like that, where just the sheer act of getting out of bed was exhausting. I remember there were days where I was home alone with Jonas and I would be in the bed literally all day and I would get up to check on him or if something crashed.
Yeah. Yeah. When did you finish your last chemo?
July 21st through July 23rd was the last rotation of rice.
Okay. Okay. Now, have you noticed a difference since then, since you stopped, of your energy level coming back? Is that to be expected? I don't know what the turnaround time for after completing chemo, where you all of a sudden start feeling a little bit better.
Let's just talk about this past week.
Okay.
So we're recording this on August 12th. Mm-hmm. And my last actual dose of chemo was July 23rd. Monday, I was exhausted and nauseous. Mm-hmm. Tuesday, I think I was just nauseous. Wednesday, I was exhausted, but not nauseous. Thursday, nauseous. Friday, nauseous. Today, finally had an appetite and not nauseous.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we're talking like we're almost close to a month out. We're about 10 days out from a month since you finished. What did the doctor say? I mean, does the doctor say you're...
The doctor said I needed a bone marrow transplant. Let's not talk about the fucking doctor, okay? The doctor walks in and says, hey, have I talked to you about a bone marrow transplant yet? He's got my labs in his hand and my PET scan results and doesn't bother to tell me that I'm cancer-free until well after he told me he wants me to have a bone marrow transplant. So let's not talk about the fucking doctor who buried the lead completely. I was definitely upset about the way he handled it. I mean, a doctor with bedside manner and some degree of, you know, ability to speak to human beings would have come in and said, hey, buddy, you know, we got your results and turns out you're cancer free, but lymphoma is a funny thing and it could be hiding anywhere. And a PET scan is not always the best way to know whether or not you have cancer. There's no cancer showing up in the PET scan. So that's good. We assume it's gone, and here's where you're going to hear some bad news, but bear with me. What we'd like for you to do next is a bone marrow transplant, because that's the most effective way to know for sure that it's gone and that it won't come back. Because right now, if you don't do a bone marrow transplant, there's always the chance this thing's going to come back at some other point. It might not even still be completely gone. We just didn't pick it up in the PET scan is all. So you really want to consider a bone marrow transplant. Had he said it to me like that, I wouldn't have wanted to punch him in the fucking throat.
Yeah.
Instead, he walks in. Hello, have I talked to you all about the bone marrow transplant? What you do is we inject you with horse shit and we take out your brains. Okay. How long does this take? 1,000 years, basically. You'll never see your wife and kids again. No, I exaggerate slightly. Uh-huh. I asked him how long a bone marrow transplant would take. Like, is it an in-and-out procedure? Is it a 24-hour procedure? And then he's like, you're in the hospital for up to 3 weeks. And I was like, eat a dick.
Wow.
I'm not sitting in the hospital for no fucking 3 weeks. And it was explained to me by other people who are not my doctor why you have to be in the hospital for up to 3 weeks. Because what a bone marrow transplant basically does is eliminate your white blood cells.
Yep.
And replace them with new ones. And so you basically have zero immune system. And so they want to keep you in a sterile environment so that there is no risk of infection. Mm-hmm. And also because you're in such bad shape with no immune system that you need to be watched. Because, I mean, I already had a low immune system going through chemo. And you heard what that was like. There were days I couldn't get out of bed. There were days where I was so nauseous I couldn't eat. You know, and what I did eat, I immediately threw back up again. So imagine having no immune system, you know? And yeah. So I really can't be home as much as I would like to be. I really can't. If I'm going to do this, I can't be home. Now, as it turns out, from what I've been told, it takes a while. I mean, the line, and I really have to thank people because once I put it out there that I had a, that I was going to need a bone marrow transplant, a line started forming to the left of people willing to like donate their own bone marrow. And, you know, it makes me feel good that I am loved and people are wanting to do that. My friend Tom is already on the registry and he was like, I will abandon my wife and children and come down there and donate my bone marrow to you. And I'm like, I don't want your stinking bone marrow, fucker. take your bone marrow and shove it up your ass. But I mean, he was not the only one. I mean, everybody I know practically contacted me and was like, I'm on the registry, I'll donate or see if I'm a match. My mother is willing to do it, you know, though she's 70, so I don't know if they'll accept her. In any case, where we are now status-wise with regards to that, I haven't even been told I'm definitely going to have it.
Yeah.
He recommended it, but he said, have a consultation. And in my anger, I kind of minimized the word consultation and just focused on 3 weeks in the hospital.
Yeah.
So now that, you know, some time has passed and conversations have been had, what the man said to me was, I would like for you to consult with the bone marrow transplant people. And if they determine that this is necessary for you and whatever way that, because apparently there's also different ways they can do it where it's not nearly as time intensive. So there's all kinds. So there are a variety of options and that's why I'm having a consultation and we just didn't like up and schedule this. Either way, it takes a long time to get done. So I'm not really worried about it at this time. And even at that, I don't have another appointment scheduled for Moffitt until November.
Nice. So that's out there, man. 3 months away. That's great. I mean, cancer-free, number one. That is tremendous. I mean, does that feel damn good that you beat cancer, man?
Yeah.
I hope so.
I feel like I got robbed of my moment of victory because of the whole bone marrow transplant thing and the way the doctor said it to me.
Sure.
You know, in the movie that is my life, you know, it should have been, you are cancer free. And I should, Hearts on Fire should have played and I should have ran out of there. And there would have been like a still frame of me jumping in the air. And,
and
there was none of that because it was like, you know, cancer free. But hey, bone marrow transplant, eh? So, but upon reflection, yeah, this year has sucked, Jesse.
I know, man.
This year has completely sucked for me. I mean, it hasn't sucked as much for my wife. She got a new job. She's happy, but in a lot of ways it did suck for her because, you know, she was very much at times a single parent. And I would be remiss without going through this entire interview and without talking about how this affected her.
Yeah.
You know, she got left alone a lot of nights because I couldn't bear the thought of staying up any longer. So like I would come home, if I ate dinner at all, it was barely. And then I would say, I have to go to bed. I'm so tired. I can't even think straight. Chemo brain is a real thing, by the way. If you don't know what chemo brain is, you can't focus. You can't think. It becomes Herculean to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I would think about work and I would have to write these biopsychosocial reports on these inmates. They normally would take me 2 to 5 minutes to get through because it's a lot of repetition of information. And, you know, we're not doing full biopsychosocials. We're doing just enough to satisfy our licensing board. So, like I said, these aren't really lengthy reports. So, like I said, it takes me on average 2 to 5 minutes to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And that 2 to 5 minutes felt like an eternity when I would have chemo brain.
Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, there were times I had to leave work early because I literally, like, the thought of sitting at my desk for more than 5 minutes just felt like absolute torture.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't happen a lot, but it happened enough. And hopefully it won't happen anymore. Like, today was a good day. Today was the best day I've had in weeks. You know, I was tired. I went to bed early last night while you guys were belly aching about Voltron and
Power Rangers,
all 72 iterations of Power Rangers. Jesus Christ!
And no shit.
Yeah, I went to bed like as soon as I got home at 7 o'clock because I left work early. And not tremendously early, but like as soon as my relief got there, I was like, and toodles, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
I literally evaporated out of my clothing and got in bed and just went to sleep. And I woke up this morning and I was definitely still tired and did not want to get out out of bed, but I had to go to work. So, you know, I figured it out, and this was one of those rare mornings where I'm driving to work and my eyes are forcibly shutting and I'm having to like hold them open with my hand and like violently shake myself to stay awake. I'm pretty sure I coasted to work at about 20 miles an hour in the morning. I'm sure it was a joy to be on the road with, but it was still the best day I've had at work in a long time. I wasn't nauseous at any point. I wasn't so tired I couldn't be at work anymore. It was a good day, and I actually came home and I was able to eat my dinner, and I'm still lively and I'm not shivering right now, and I'm talking to you. So
yeah,
you know, knock on wood. So yeah, it was a good day. As I
keep it that way.
You know, there were plenty of nights where she took care of the kids by herself because I had to go to bed early. There were plenty of times where I didn't get out of bed on the weekends. There were times where she would make dinner and I couldn't eat, and you know, and she had spent all that time cooking, and I would just, you know, say, like, I don't have the energy to eat, or I don't feel physically able to eat right now, and I would go to bed. I think her favorite thing would be for me to like go into the bedroom and lay down, but then wake up and do a podcast. And so, I'm sure those were nights where secretly she wanted to punch me right in the dick. Motherfucker. But I mean, sometimes those were the only nights that I could do a podcast, was if I took a nap.
Yeah.
Our Wonder Woman podcast at the beginning of June, I literally did in the bed. Like, I couldn't get out. I was so tired, I couldn't get out of the bed. But I wasn't so tired that I couldn't talk. But there's been nights, Jesse, where I called off because I literally physically couldn't talk.
And there's been plenty of nights where you should have called off because instead you soldiered through. Honestly, I would have probably said, guys, I'm out for 6 months. Have at it. Because I'm going through this and I don't want to have to worry about that.
No, fuck that.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's exactly what you would say.
I hung on to as much normalcy as I could, but it wasn't just podcasting where I say I hung on to normalcy. I mean, I'm talking about all the times that I had to go to bed early or that I couldn't eat or whatever. But when I felt okay, even if I just felt like blah, as long as I get up and move, fuck it, I'm moving. Yeah. I hung on to as much normalcy as I could. I have two children who are depending on their father to be there for them. I have a wife who is depending on her husband. So it's more than just the podcasting. It was, I'm not gonna allow the rest of my life to fall into the ditch because of this.
Yeah.
Because then it wins. Because even if the cancer goes away, if at the end of the day I can't live my life, then why am I even fighting this disease? Mm-hmm. You know, and that might sound weird to people, but that's been my philosophy through this whole ordeal, which is I'm going to live as normal as a life as I can. And I did. I mean, we went one day over the summer to Animal Kingdom, and, you know, this was at a time where I was having edema where my legs were swelling. That was also a fun thing. So the achiness and the muscle pain that I was feeling prior to getting chemo goes away. And midway through chemo, I start having such painful leg swelling that I can barely walk.
Ugh.
Like, you know, like it was like my legs were on fire, and you know, you could tell that my ankles and my feet looked like balloons. I look like I had the diabetes. It was all just just bloat from water. It was edema. You know, my legs had swollen up like balloons, and I remember, you know, some days were better than other days. We had planned to go to Animal Kingdom like the week before, and that day came, and short of me not having the ability to walk at all. I mean, if I had been paralyzed from the waist down, I was going to Animal Kingdom. You know, were there times where I sat, you know, while my, you know, luckily the way that day worked out was the kids were doing this thing where they were, whatever the Cub Scout thing is from Up, they made that an activity. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Up. Okay, like Junior Wilderness or some shit like that. Well, they have like a Junior Wilderness badge collection thing at Animal Kingdom now, in addition to the Pandora World. And, you know, my kids had such a great time collecting those badges, those completely worthless badges. But they thought they were just the greatest thing ever. And when they would go and talk to, you know, the various park rangers that were around, you know, and would give them their badges, I would take those opportunities to sit down. I got nauseous after we had had a fairly big lunch. And I think it was just because I ate too much. And I made sure I took my pills that day, my nausea pills. You know, again, maybe, you know, I know other people, they have to take off work. They don't get out of the bed much. They don't get out of the house. I don't want to say even if it killed me, because that's a bit of an exaggeration. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't going to let this thing change my life where I still had power to keep going the way that I wanted it to go. And I'm an active person, and I'm active with my children, and I'm active with my wife, and I go to work, and I wasn't going to let that stop.
You already mentioned the impact it had with Melissa. How's the kids doing?
The kids are fine. I mean, I think Lily understood more of what was going on than Jonas did, but I did as much as I could with them. And when I was available and physically able to, I interacted with them as much as I could. You know, I read to Jonas. Usually, like, we split bedtime. So, like, one of us reads to one child, one of us reads to the other child. And almost every night that I could, I read to Jonas. You know, the nights that I wasn't taking, you know, going to bed early. You know, some of those nights I read to Lily, and Melissa would read to Jonas. Every night that I come home from work, the first thing out of Jonas's mouth is, "Daddy, let's wrestle." And I would sit on the couch and I would, you know, throw him around. Yeah, and I interacted with Lily as much as I could. I never did take her to see Wonder Woman, though. We just couldn't get it done. You know, she would want to tell me about her dolls, and, you know, and how much energy does it take to just sit and listen to her babble about her Monster High dolls or her Barbie dolls. Mm-hmm. So I was there for the ways that the kids needed me. I was there for the way the kids wanted me as much as I could be.
Yeah, the last thing you wanted to do, obviously, was shut yourself in somewhere and let the sickness take hold. So that's, I respect exactly what you were saying. Don't let it change you. So that's, I think that's important. And as it's already messing with you physically, you do your best not to let it change you the other ways that it doesn't need to. And I know that's got to be a struggle. So it's good on you that you kept your, and you stayed at it and stuck with it.
What kind of father would I be if I allowed this disease to make me less of a father?
That's right. That's right. What's the next goal here? You already said you don't have to go back till November.
Correct.
So what are we hoping for here? Are we just, we're going to be, you know, taking it day by day and just continue to get better and better? Or is there a goal that you're looking at to achieve here sometime soon? Or
right now, my personal goal is to go a week without throwing up in the sink.
Okay.
Like, if I can accomplish that, that would be huge.
All right.
Well, I've already accomplished one goal. I am off all my cancer meds.
Awesome.
I don't take any cancer meds anymore. I still take gabapentin at night because that tends to help me sleep, and it helps with leg pain because I still have some residual leg pain from the edema. But for the most part, you know, like, I don't have to take any of, I don't have to take Allurion anymore, unless of course I develop gout, then I'm going to have to start taking it again. I take the Compazine and the Zofran as needed, but today I didn't have to take them at all. So, and hopefully I won't have to take them ever again. You know, again, I'd like to go a week without being nauseous. That would be awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm only taking one medication, and that's for my blood pressure, which, you know, that came out of one of the procedures I had very early in the year that ended with me being intubated. And then I went into, I went into AFib.
Oh, yeah.
So my cardiac doctor that came out of that is a little tentative about taking me off the blood pressure pills, even though I really don't need them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't want to argue with the doctor, and with everything else that's happening, it's like, all right, so if I take one blood pressure pill, it's not going to kill me. Am I going to be like, oh, fuck medicine? So, but I don't have to take any more of the other cancer drugs that I was taking.
Okay. So we're turning the corner. We got radiation and the chemo behind us. We got November to look forward to find out. That is that when your consultation is?
No, I don't know when my consultation is. I'm waiting for them to call me.
Okay. Now, is that something that you think will happen pretty soon?
It's supposed to happen within a week of me talking to the doctor, and that was Wednesday.
Okay. All right. So you'll have some more news and be discussing the bone marrow transplant. Any idea? I know you said that it's pretty involved. 3 weeks, you're going to be in the hospital. It's going to wipe you out.
I've seen it where it's only a week. I don't know. It's hard for me to answer. I feel like I'm talking to my mother now. It's hard for me to answer questions regarding the bone marrow transplant. I simply don't have enough information.
Understood.
I just know that a consultation hasn't even been scheduled yet. I'm waiting for the people to call me.
Okay. All right. Well, you got any good stories to tell us before? I mean, as far as struggling or having to deal with any funny things that's happened since you started this road to recovery here? I mean,
well, I missed the Atomic Blonde, Damn You Hollywood, because I was having neutropenic fever spikes.
the hell is neutropenic?
I can't explain what neutropenic is. All I know is that let's call them chemo fever spikes.
Okay.
They were happening nightly there for a while. And one night I got above 101. I was like, I'll just wrap myself up in a blanket. I'll take some ibuprofen. It'll be fine. And my wife's like, no, that's not what they told you. They told you that if you had a fever that went over 100, that it went, you know, went to 101, you needed to call Moffitt. And I'm like, I'm not calling those stupid Moffitt.
And doctors, like, yeah. What do they know?
And she said, yes, you are. So I said, fine. And they were like, okay, you need to come in. So I had my parents pick me up, and they took me to what's basically the Moffitt version of an ER. It's called direct patient referral, but it's their emergency room. Mm-hmm. And they did labs, and they took a stool sample. When I found out that I was that I was being admitted, basically, and that I wasn't going to be able to leave to the next day, possibly the day after, I couldn't wait to give him a stool sample. I wanted to fucking shit right in the bed. There's your fucking stool sample, you assholes. I was mad, Jesse. I didn't want to be there at all. Like, I was okay when there was a possibility that I was neutropenic, which means that I, you know, that my white blood cells had dropped to the point where I was gonna catch an infection. Mm-hmm. So, but when they told me that my white blood cell count was fine, my platelets were fine, all my labs were fine, but they were keeping me for observation, basically, I was like, no, fuck this. And you could not have seen my attitude become worse. So, you know, I was such a bag of shit to my parents. I owe them an apology. And I did apologize. I was such a pest. My dad's like, oh, things are going to get better. I'm like, nope, nothing's ever going to get better. I'm going to have cancer forever.
Oh, no. No.
Dad's like, yeah, Wednesday will come and hopefully you'll hear good news. I'm like, yeah, the good news will be I have to do 54 fucking rounds of chemo. I was such a bag of dicks.
Shithead.
Yep. I apologized profusely after that. I was not a fair child to my parents. I was not fair to Flair.
Not fair to Flair. So they brought you in, and then you were released because I spoke to you.
The next day, the doctor comes in. He's like, how you feeling? And I'm just like, good enough to go home. And he was like, okay, we'll work on that for you. I was gone by like 11 a.m. I was on the phone to my parents. I was just like, you need to get up here right now, because the minute I have my discharge paperwork in hand and they show up with that wheelchair, you better have the car primed and ready.
Wow. What would you tell somebody that has got the diagnosis? That you did.
Don't lose hope. You gotta hang on to something. And I'm proof that at least with large diffuse B cell lymphoma, you can get past it. You do the treatment, do what the doctor tells you to. Maybe change up your diet a little bit. You know, try to eat more vegetables than not. I'm not saying go vegan, because I tried that for a week and it was a shitty week. Don't assume cancer is a death sentence. In some cases, it is. I'm not going to lie. They were telling me that had it been stage 4 lung cancer, they'd have been talking to me about how to be comfortable because I was a goner. But it was stage 4 large diffuse B cell lymphoma, and while that sounds big and scary, you know, I just plugged away at what, you know, I showed up and did what they told me to do. I didn't like it. I hated it. I hated every minute of it. I wouldn't wish chemotherapy on my worst enemy. Every time I had to get up and go to Moffitt, I wanted to burn the place to the fucking ground. I was just that angry all the time. You know, I say that, but it's not like the people at Moffitt did anything wrong. Everyone did their job. Most of them did it competently. Most of them were very, very nice people. I just didn't want to be there. I didn't want this disease. I didn't want to be there. I wanted to live my life. A lot of times after I was done with chemo, I went to the movies. So, you know, and in some of those cases, I wasn't even awake through the entire movie. But I would tell people, push yourself as much as you can, because you need some, you know, as they say, intestinal fortitude. You need, don't let this thing define you. Don't let this thing beat you. Push yourself when you can, accept help where it's offered, and rest where you're able. And eventually time will pass, and hopefully you too will be cancer free.
All right. Good words. Real quick, before we get to ready to sign it out here, we've still got to plug that awesome shirt that's out there from represent.com. Fight Radulich, fight. If you just go to that website, type in Radulich, episodes at represent.com. Type in Radulich at the top. That's how I found mine. Real easy. Not too many people share that name. not going to find too many Radulich shirts on represent.com. But you can easily find it there. It's an awesome shirt. I got mine today. Of all days, I get it today when we get to talk about you being cancer-free. I am absolutely thrilled that I get number one, represent Mark Radulich and his fight against cancer. And when people ask me about the shirt, you know what I'm going to fucking tell them? I'm going to tell them, yeah, Mark Radulich won that motherfucker. So fight Radulich, fight. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen. Hashtag fight Radulich, fight. Represent.com. Mark, I leave it to you, good sir. Thank you again for letting me come on here and update our good listeners with your current situation. We're going to come back, right? Are we going to come back and revisit Mr. Bone Marrow Transplant at some point?
You know, if I've got something to say, we'll talk about it. If I don't, we won't.
Sounds great.
All right.
Take us out.
Well, thanks, Jesse, for being a part of this, for volunteering to interview me. You know, it gives me a chance to sort of revisit and talk about it. You know, I was a couple of times throughout this, I was told, like, why don't you go to a group? I don't need therapy. I don't need groups. I don't need counseling because I've got podcasts and I've got Jesse and I've got Robert Winfrey and I've got Robert Cooper and I've got Sean Comer and I've got Ronnie Adams and I've got his favorite band, Goat Whore.
Somebody tag him, man.
I've got the whole Radulich and Broadcasting Network family, and I haven't been shy about talking about this when it's come up, and that's all the therapy that I need. And and on top of that, I have a wife who I can talk to at any time pretty openly. So, you know, who needs therapy when you've got friends like the Radulich and Broadcasting Network?
Amen.
So with that, I say thank you. And to all of you listening and were gracious enough to buy a t-shirt, be well, be safe, and behave.